One day, Jesus asked his disciples a question. Who do people say I am? And the response from the disciples, it went something like this. Jesus, some people say that you are the reincarnation of John the Baptist. Other people say that you are the prophet Elijah, remanifested. And still other people say that you're just one of Israel's many, many prophets. Who do people say I am? This has to be the most intriguing question of all time, in my opinion. The reason why it's so intriguing is because once this conversation got started, it never stopped. It has continued now for 2,000 years as countless people have sought to answer this question about Jesus in their own unique ways. Who do people say I am? Some people say that Jesus was just a traditional Jewish rabbi. Others say that he wasn't a traditional rabbi at all, but a monk who lived in the same mysterious monastic community as John the Baptist. Others say that Jesus was mainly a temple reformer, seeking to restore the second temple to the glory of the first temple, Solomon's temple. Other people say that Jesus was a Merkaba mystic, one of the forerunners of Kabbalah spirituality. And yet some people go in an entirely different direction altogether and say that yes, while Jesus was Jewish, he was more of like a Stoic philosopher. Other people say he was a Cynic philosopher. Some people have even argued that Jesus was the Jewish Socrates. Still others, noticing the profound parallels between Jesus and the Buddha, say that Jesus was a Buddhist monk. And they say that the reason why Jesus was so misunderstood by his own people was because he wasn't that Jewish. He was more Buddhist, right? That'll probably do it. But not only that, some people have even said that Jesus spent those missing years of his life in the Gospels, right, that we don't hear about, in India, studying Buddhist meditation. This may sound far-fetched to many of us, but there's actually some pretty solid historical evidence suggesting that this really could have happened. But still other people, like the famous yogi who brought yoga to the West, say that Jesus wasn't a Jewish monk or a Buddhist monk as much as he was a Hindu guru. This yogi said there wasn't any difference between the essence of his own teachings and Jesus' teachings. In fact, this yogi was so convinced of Jesus' Hindu-ness that he wrote a 2-volume commentary on the Gospels. Put together, this commentary is 2,500 pages long. Yeah, this yogi had more to say about Jesus than most New Testament theologians do. But this isn't everything that people have had to say about Jesus, right? Some people say Jesus was a socialist. Some people say he was a wisdom teacher. Some say that he was the embodiment of the sacred feminine. Well, then you have the MAGA Jesus, Trump guns and Jesus, God bless America. Then there's the historical Jesus, the Christ of faith versus the Jesus of history. And then you have the black Jesus, the white Jesus. Yes, there's even a tantric Jesus, if you're feeling naughty. Lots of folks in the 60s were pretty convinced that Jesus wore bell bottoms and tie-dye. In the early 2000s, apparently Jesus was everybody's homeboy. That's what the t-shirt said back then, at least. And then, of course, you have Jesus the right-winger, Jesus the progressive, Jesus the activist and the social justice warrior, Jesus the ethical teacher. According to everybody on the History Channel these days, Jesus was an ancient alien. I don't know when the History Channel became like the Ancient Alien Channel. But my all-time favorite Jesus has to be Jesus the boyfriend. When I was in high school, I asked a really nice girl, not my now wife, but I asked her, you're really nice too. It was a different girl. She always wants me to clarify when I tell stories like this. In high school, before I met my wife, I asked a really nice girl out on a date once. Do you know what she said to me? I'm only dating Jesus right now. Oh, I didn't realize that Jesus was on the market, single and ready to mingle. A few weeks later, I saw her walking hand in hand down the hallway with a guy who played electric guitar at the coolest church in town. It was on that day that I learned that Jesus' real name is Adam Husky. Because that's the guy she was strolling down the hallway with. Who do people say I am? After the disciples gave their various responses to Jesus' questions, something really interesting happens. Jesus doesn't affirm or deny anything that has been said about him. He doesn't take the time to correct how people are perceiving him. Jesus, some say you're John the Baptist. Others say you're Elijah. Still others say you're one of the prophets. Jesus, some say you're a Buddhist. Some say a Hindu. Some say an activist. Some say a philosopher. Some say a socialist. Some say a conservative. Some say an alien. Some say a homeboy. However, what is abundantly clear, Jesus, is that people would compete for your love if you're to wind up on Love is Blind or The Bachelor. Jesus really must be living water because single people everywhere are thirsting after him. I thought that one would get more laughs. That was a good one. What if it turned out that all of these people are kind of right, or really right, in their own way? Couldn't the Buddhist see Jesus in her Buddhism? Couldn't the Stoic see Jesus in his Stoicism? Couldn't the liberal see Jesus in their liberalism? Couldn't the conservative see Jesus in their conservatism? Perhaps Jesus doesn't divide himself over all of these isms that we obsessively divide ourselves over today. Perhaps this Jesus has been so relatable to so many different flavors of people throughout history because he touches something deep that rests at the heart of each and every single one of us. There's just something about him that causes us to see so much of ourselves in him and so much of him in us. As my 7-year-old boy said to me just this last Monday, he said, "Daddy, I realized today that in school we're learning about things like courage and patience, perseverance and compassion. Well, Jesus practiced all of these things. He was all of these things. He is the thing that all of us need to be." Another reason why Jesus' question is so fascinating, "Who do people say I am?" is because once we take a stab at answering it, another pressing question follows closely upon its heels. What mere mortal can do what Jesus has done? If you want proof of Jesus' divinity, could it not be found in the fact that so many people have staked their claim on him? Like, I don't know about you all, but I'm not at all convinced that a mere mortal, a mere person, just a simple person, could do this, could be so socially and culturally adaptable, much less relevant, over the span of some 2,000 years. I mean, I personally love people like the Dalai Lama and Desmond Tutu, for example. These profoundly, profoundly holy and magnetic world changers. But they have not gripped the entire globe in the same way that Jesus has. Now, I know that some people will balk and they'll roll their eyes and they'll argue that a lot of these different people throughout the course of history, they're simply just like refashioning Jesus in their own image. They're projecting themselves onto Jesus and remaking him after their own image and likeness, right? What if all of these people aren't projecting and they're not refashioning as much as they are resonating? Resonating with the source of their being, recognizing the ground of their very existence. If we all really are made in the image of God, and if this Jesus is the image of the invisible God, par excellence, as St. Paul would say, then in Jesus, all of these people are encountering the one whose image they know deep down that they bear. In experiencing him, they know that they are touching the deepest mystery within themselves as well. Well, after Jesus inquired as to what other people had to say about him, he was pretty curious to hear what his disciples had to say about him. He turned to them and he asked, "Who do you say I am?" Peter answered, "You are the Messiah." And Jesus affirmed this answer, saying that God the Father had opened Peter's mind to who Jesus was in that moment. But then the story takes an interesting twist, and many of you know this story, right? Immediately after this, this profession of Jesus' messiahhood, messiahship, right? Jesus starts to talk about how he, as the Messiah, is going to have to suffer and die in order to rise again. And what does Peter do? Peter pulls Jesus aside and starts to rebuke him. Jesus, if you really are the Messiah, you can't suffer. Jesus, if you really are the Messiah, yeah, you definitely can't die. Season 27 of The Bachelor's coming soon, and you need to make one lucky lady's dreams come true. Jesus, if you really are the Messiah, you have to do the types of things that I believe you should do. Even though Peter was technically correct in saying that Jesus was the Messiah, he was so tunnel visioned in on his own definition of what a Messiah is that he missed what Jesus' project has always been about. The mission, the project from the very beginning was always resurrection. Easter, this day, was always the goal. And the issue that a lot of us here have, if not most of us here, I think, is that we tend to think about Easter and resurrection much in the same way that Peter thought about messiahhood, messiahship. I don't know what the technical correct word there is. We are so tunnel visioned in on our own ideas and definitions of what Easter is and what resurrection means that we often miss what resurrection actually means. You see, a lot of people believe that Jesus let himself be killed so that he could rise again in order to display just how powerful he was. It's like a cosmic arm flex, right? Then everyone would be compelled to believe in him, much like how a child would be compelled to believe that magic is real because they saw a bunny pulled out of a hat, or much like how that one cousin of yours believes that professional wrestling is real, all because he once saw Hulk Hogan body slam some poor chap on TV once, right? But what if there is just so much more to this whole Easter thing than most of us realize? What if this gospel, this good news, is bigger than the ways that we tend to define it? If resurrection was the mission from the very beginning, then what does resurrection mean? I remember something that a famous priest once wrote. He said that when he was in seminary, one of his professors claimed that if a video camera would have been placed in front of Jesus' tomb on Easter morning, it wouldn't have filmed a lone man, a lone Jesus, walking out of it. Rather, this professor thought that it was far more likely that if this camera would have captured anything at all, it would have captured something like beams of light coming out of the tomb and extending in all directions, eventually permeating the entire universe. And this professor's take on the resurrection led this priest to conclude, in the resurrection, the single physical body of Jesus moved beyond all limits of space and time into a new notion of physicality and light, which includes all of us in our embodiment. In other words, Jesus died in the singular, he arose in the plural. Jesus died as one guy. He rises as us. When we proclaim that Jesus is risen, the truth that we are proclaiming is that Jesus is risen in us. As St. Paul has said, we are the body of Christ, meaning we are Jesus' resurrected body in this world. So Easter is not some earth-shattering event that happened 2,000 years ago, as much as it is the earth-shattering event that is this present moment, because in this present moment, Christ is fully present to us always. He's present to us. He is present with us. He's present in us. And yes, he's even present as us. As one of my mentors once wrote, Christ's presence is, and since the resurrection, has always been a mystical presence. And a mystical presence doesn't take up space anywhere. The mystical presence of Christ is right here. We are surrounded and wrapped, immersed in, and indwelt by Christ. There isn't any place to go where we can find Christ any more fully than we can right here, right now. Indeed, speaking of going on a journey to find Christ is like a fish going on a journey to find the ocean. Therefore, our so-called journey must be an effort to remove the blinders and veils from our eyes, to open our souls to recognize and to be aware of this Christ who is around us and within us and everywhere. A skeptic once bluntly asked one of my heroes, Father Thomas Keating, this question. He says, Father, if this Jesus of yours really is real, and if he really did rise from the grave, and if he really does love us, and if he really is present to us as you claim, then why can't I see him? Do you know what Father Keating's response was? When Christ has become you, and when you have become Christ, there's nothing left to see. Thank you.